This is a public radio special report, the execution tapes.
This is a recording of the execution of Ivan Ray Stanley, EF-103-603.
I'm Ray Suarez. As long as there is capital punishment, there will be the debate about its constitutionality, its morality, its usefulness, even its efficiency. And as long as there is capital punishment, there will be another debate about how public executions should be, about whether more than a handful of witnesses should view them, about whether they should be broadcast. This second debate has flared anew in recent weeks as the execution of Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh approaches. Relatives of his victims will watch him die on a special closed-circuit hookup, but McVeigh's own wish that his execution be shown to the whole nation was denied. Until now, it was believed there were no pictures, no films, no video or audio recordings of the more than 700 executions carried out in this country in the last quarter century. Until now, there are recordings of the death penalty being carried out. There are audio tapes made by the Georgia Department of Corrections that document the 23 executions carried out by that state since 1983. We've obtained these tapes, and in this program, we're going to let you hear some of them. We'll play excerpts, and we'll play one entire execution. We'll discuss the tapes with legal and journalistic experts, as well as death penalty advocates and critics. But first, some background on the debate over broadcasting executions and on how the Georgia tapes surfaced from reporter Brooke Gladstone.
There was a time in America when attending a public execution was both possible and popular. The last time was in Kentucky in the summer of 1936, when thousands of spectators gathered for the hanging of young Rainey Bethea, convicted of rape. Newspapers said it was a boisterous affair. History tells us that was often so. In fact, the word gala is said to be derived from gallows. The unseemly celebrations may have been part of the reason executions were taken behind closed doors. The states do allow for witnesses, including reporters, but no cameras, no tape recorders. The rules are challenged from time to time, most recently in California, but most judges accept the argument that cameras and broadcasts would expose the prison staff to the risk of retaliation and increase the likelihood of riots. To this day, there have been no broadcasts of executions, live or on tape. Terry Thornton represents the California Department of Corrections.
The courts have traditionally, when they rule in this sort of thing, they realize that prison officials know more about how to manage and operate prisons than the courts do.
Outside the courtroom, there is a similar winning argument that the broadcasts would be dangerous to the public, too.
My perception, based on people I've talked to and radio shows I've done, is that people who are against the death penalty tend to also be against broadcasting it. People who are for the death penalty also tend to be against broadcasting it.
Jane Kirtley is a specialist in First Amendment law and a journalism professor at the University of Minnesota. She holds the minority view that freedom of information should prevail, especially with respect to the death penalty.
People have asked me, what do you think would be the consequence if we broadcast this? And my answer is that I have no idea. I don't know which way the pendulum would swing. All I know is that if we were able to broadcast executions, people in making those judgments would be much more informed in doing so. And I can't see how that's a bad thing.
Most Americans have no true images of capital punishment to inform their judgments, but they do hold images of executions in their heads. They got them from TV, and especially movies, from recent films like Dead Man Walking and The Green Mile, and from classic object lessons like Angels with Dirty Faces, in which Jimmy Cagney is dragged to the chair. In fact, most of the violence in our lives is virtual or vicarious. We see strangling and stabbing and shootouts nightly. And so, if we were able to witness an execution on our TV screens, would we be able to believe it? Wendy Lesser, author of Pictures at an Execution, doesn't think so.
The way people watch the news and not get disgusted or outraged by it, I have no doubt that people could begin to watch executions and view it as another form of reality TV, and it really would cease to seem real to them precisely because it was appearing on TV.
There are people who share Lesser's revulsion for executions who profoundly disagree on the issue of broadcasting them. Michael Mears is an Atlanta lawyer. In 1998, he was in the middle of a long campaign to challenge the constitutionality of the electric chair when he learned that the state of Georgia had been taping its executions for 15 years. He got the tapes and used them as evidence in his suit.
We found that it's a very bureaucratic process. They wanted documentation that they had crossed all of their T's and dotted all their I's. And so the audio tapes were used for that purpose.
A newspaper story that mentioned Mears and the tapes was noticed by a radio producer in New York.
I couldn't believe it. It seemed like it would have been a mistake. But we made a phone call down to Georgia to this attorney. And indeed, he had tapes of every execution in Georgia. I was blown away. I couldn't believe that these things existed.
That's David Isay, who is responsible for what you're about to hear. 6 months ago, he produced a documentary called Witness to an Execution, conversations with people who had participated in or been present at dozens of executions in Texas. He got the tapes from Michael Mears, and he listened to them. Isay decided that in any program about the tapes, one full execution must be broadcast. He selected the execution of Ivan Ray Stanley from July 12, 1984. Isay chose that tape because it was one of the earliest recorded and so was more descriptive. Also, Stanley's execution was not unusual. There were no mistakes or malfunctions. Stanley's was a typical execution, as executions go.
That's one of the extraordinary parts of this story, because when we dug into this completely random case, we found out that there were a number of interesting facts about the case. One was that Stanley was retarded. He had an IQ of 62. The other was that the murder that Stanley was involved in, which was a horrendous murder of an insurance agent in a small town in Georgia, was actually carried out by two men, Stanley and his partner, a guy named Joseph Thomas. And Stanley claimed he was a bystander. He was involved in the robbery, but he didn't commit the murder. Joseph Thomas ended up having his death sentence commuted to life while Ivan Stanley was executed.
The entire execution of Ivan Ray Stanley is documented on this tape, including the parts most witnesses never get to see. The moments, for example, when the prisoner is led into the chamber and strapped into the chair. Usually, witnesses file into the observation room after the prisoner is confined to the chair or to the gurney. A curtain opens, and they see only the moment of death, and then the curtain closes. David Isay.
This is the only opportunity the American public will ever have to see everything that happens from start to finish in an execution. It's never going to happen again. This is a curtainless document, and that's part of what makes it so extraordinary.
Isay maintains that he is not putting the tape before the public to provoke a particular response about capital punishment, and it's possible that it may change no one's mind one way or the other. Certainly many people, even those who hold the same views on the death penalty, will hear this tape very differently. Attorney Michael Mears.
I think that the banality of these tapes is more frightening than anything Hollywood can do, because it shows the dispatching of a human being. It shows how the killing of human beings by the state of Georgia, at least, has become a bureaucratic function of the Department of Corrections.
Author Wendy Lesser doesn't want to hear the tapes and doesn't think anybody should. In fact, she believes they only obscure the human drama that actually took place. Much better, she says, to let a reporter tell the story than to hear it described moment by moment as on the Georgia tapes.
If you go through a reporter, you always get the human element. Even reporters that are in favor of the death penalty, when they witness somebody being executed, they include some sense of shame and pain and difficulty at being present at this event.
Producer David Isay.
The soul of a person is in their voice, and there are certain stories that are very well told on the page, but you're 1 degree distant. And with these tapes, you're 1 degree closer. So I think it's much more immediate and much more powerful to actually hear the voices and to hear them distilled through a reporter's pen.
The tape is a neutral document. Individual listeners will have to determine for themselves if they are hearing a soul or soullessness, closure or just another crime, justice or revenge, or all these things at once. All that is known for certain is that this is how it happened. I'm Brooke Gladstone reporting.
In a moment, we're going to play the tape of the execution of Ivan Ray Stanley. Some things you should know. The execution took place at the Diagnostic and Classification Prison in Jackson, Georgia in 1984. Most of the time, you'll be hearing one person speak. He is Willis Marrable, an assistant to the prison warden. Marrable watched the execution through a one-way mirror and described what he saw into a telephone line to the Department of Correction officials in Atlanta. This tape has been edited slightly to shorten long silences, minimize repetitive phrases, and remove unintelligible comments not picked up well by the tape recorder. You will hear, throughout the tape, the loud sound of doors slamming shut elsewhere in the prison. When the electrocution begins, you will hear three volunteers each simultaneously press a button to start the electric current. Only one of the buttons actually triggers the electricity, so the three state employees will never know which of them sent the fatal charge. Once the buttons are pressed, three different phases of high voltage pass through the prisoner's body. Then there's a 5-minute cool-down period before death is officially pronounced. On this tape, you will not hear directly from the execution chamber. You will not hear the prisoner's voice. You will not hear the sound of the electricity. You will not hear from any of the witnesses. If there are people within listening range who could be upset by hearing this tape, or if you prefer not to listen, please turn off your radio and rejoin us at 1:30 for a conversation about the issues raised by these tapes.
This is a recording of the execution of Ivan Ray Stanley, EF-103-603, July 12, 1984.
Colonel Lowe, Mickey?
Yes.
The witnesses are now entering the witness room.
Okay.
The state witnesses have entered the witness room and have seated themselves on the front row. At this time, the news media witnesses are entering. All witnesses have arrived and have seated.
Let's proceed.
We can proceed if you're ready.
Colonel Lowe, Mickey, the warden has entered the execution chamber at this time, approaching the microphone, and is in the process of briefing all witnesses to remain quiet and to avoid any unnecessary movement. He is also advising them that medical assistance is available if needed. The warden at this time is in the process of confirming all witnesses. All witnesses have been confirmed. The warden is in the process of advising all witnesses that we will now proceed with the court-ordered execution of Ivan Stanley. Mickey, Colonel Lowe?
Yes.
We're still waiting for the execution team members to bring him into the execution chamber.
All right,
would
you stand by and keep a line up?
Colonel Lowe, Mickey? The execution team is now in the process. Escorting the condemned into the execution chamber. He is walking unassisted, walked straight to the chair, and has seated himself in it. One of the execution team members is now in the process of securing the back strap. The other members are in the process of securing the arm straps and leg straps. The back strap is secure at this time. Both arm straps are secure at this time. They're still in the process of securing the leg straps. At this time, the condemned has been secured in the chair. He is not moving. He's just sitting there very passively staring out at the witnesses. The superintendent has afforded the condemned an opportunity to make a last statement. He has declined to make a last statement.
Are you ready to tell him that?
He has afforded the opportunity for prayer. He declined this also. The warden is now in the process of reading the essential court order to the witnesses and to the condemned.
The court has sentenced the defendant Ivan Ray Stanley on the 15th day of January 1977 in the forest of Longwood, Georgia.
The condemned is still sitting there very passively, no movement, staring out at to the witnesses.
On the 12th day of July.
The superintendent is still in the process of reading the court order to the condemned. This time, the superintendent has completed reading the central court order. The execution team members are now in the execution chamber with the headset and the leg band. One member is in the process of securing the leg band to the fleshy part of the inmate's right leg. Two members of the execution team is in the process of securing the headset to the condemned. The condemned has offered no resistance throughout. He's just sitting there very passively, not moving. The leg band has been secured to the condemned's right leg, and also the headset has been secured to his head. Perspiration is now being wiped from the forehead of the condemned, and he is secure and ready for execution, with the exception of the hood being placed over his head and the wires being attached to the leg band and to the headset. The electrician now has entered the execution chamber and is in the process of securing the wire to the headset.
They're moving very well. It's a good time to do it right now. Marable?
Yes, sir.
Stand still. Mickey, put William Hill on.
Hello?
William? Okay, Attorney General's here.
Okay.
Hill, this is Mike.
Yeah.
If you got any reason why the execution shouldn't be carried out?
No, I don't.
Thank you.
All right. Colonel Hill, Colonel Lowe?
Yes.
Mickey, the wires have been attached and secured to the headset and to the leg band. The perspiration has been wiped again from the condemned's forehead, and the hood is being placed on at this time. The face hood has been secured. All of the warden and all execution team members have departed the execution chamber. Stand by for the warden's last telephone check.
Ralph, this is Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
There are no stays. You can proceed to carry out the official order of the court.
Very well.
On my count of three, press your buttons. One, three.
Colonel Lowe?
Yes.
Mickey, the execution is now in progress. When it first surge entered his body, he stiffened, and I heard a pop as if one of the straps broke, but I can't tell from this vantage point. He is still at this time sitting there with clenched fists with no other movement. He's slowly relaxing at this time. The first phase of the execution is completed. We are now into the second phase. The second phase is completed at this time. We are now into the third and final stage. From my vantage point, it seems that the inmate has relaxed somewhat. His fists are still clenched, but there's no movement from the condemned. There's still no movement from the individual. He's still just sitting there. Third phase and the execution is completed. We're now into the 5 minutes elapsed time. It appeared when the execution was completed and the power was off, he relaxed somewhat more than he was. It was pretty visible that he relaxed even more than what it seemed before.
Any reaction from the witnesses?
They're sitting very still, just observing. No, I see one or two of the media writing notes, taking notes, but other than that, they're just sitting staring into the execution chamber. We have completed 1 minute of the 5 minutes lapse time.
That would drink after 10 o'clock at night.
Colonel Lowe, Mickey,
yes.
We have now completed 2 minutes of the 5 minutes lapse time. There's still no, very little movement from any of the witnesses. No one even taking notes at this time. They're just sitting there staring into the execution chamber.
I lost faith.
Colonel Lowe, Mickey,
yes.
We have now completed 3 minutes of the 5 minutes lapse time. Nothing to report on the witnesses. They're still just sitting there, very still, looking into the execution chamber.
You're approaching your fourth minute now, right?
Yes, sir. We have now completed 4 minutes, 1 minute remaining.
about ready to go in?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we got a few more seconds. Colonel Lowe, Mickey?
Yes.
We have now completed 5 minutes lapse time. Stand by, for the doctors are now preparing to enter the execution chambers to check for life signs. One of the physicians is now in the process of doing this. The first physician is still in the process of checking for life signs. The first physician has completed his examination. The second is now in the process of making his check. The second doctor has now completed his examination. The third and final doctor is in the process of making his check. The examination is completed. Stand by for the superintendent's time of death and confirmation of death. The superintendent has advised all witnesses that death did occur in 12:24, this date. He has instructed all witnesses to depart the witness room and to be transported back to the front of the institution. Curtains are drawn at this time. Colonel Lowe, Mickey?
Yes.
That completes it.
Marable, see what you can find, what that snap pop that you were talking about a while ago.
I think it was just the electricity arc. I don't think any strap broke anything. He just jerked real hard and caused the electricity to arc.
Okay.
They have removed the hood, the face hood, and are in the process now of taking or removing the headset. The headset has been removed. The electrician is now in the process of removing the electrical wire from the leg band. The execution team members are now in the process of removing the straps. The stretcher has been brought in to place the inmate's body on once they have removed him from the chair. Okay. The electrical wire has been removed from the condemned's right leg. He is being removed from the electric chair at this time and being placed on the stretcher. He is being removed from the execution chamber at this time, and the execution team members are taking him to the autopsy room. That's all I can see, Colonel Lowe.
Is the warden available?
Just a minute.
You and your staff did an excellent job. We appreciate it very much.
Okay, that we had a little bit of a scare. I don't know if they related it to you or not. The popping sound.
Yeah.
We were thinking that what happened because he sat there for that 3 minutes, that the water and the sponge on his leg ran out right there by his foot, and we're thinking that that's just it was like a little bolt of lightning.
Did you see anything?
No, they said Colonel Hardison and other people in the witness room said they didn't see anything like that. Now, I still feel good about it, really.
It ran too smooth, Ralph, but don't screw it up next time.
Okay.
Mike Bowers wants to say something
now. Okay.
Ralph, yes, I second what Dave said. Very smooth job.
Okay. We appreciate it. Just get us another one.
Thank you, Ralph.
Okay. Thank you.
Marable?
Here he is. Yes, sir.
Colonel Lowe?
Marable?
Yes, sir.
I want to thank you.
You're quite welcome, sir. Anytime.
Good night.
Good night, sir.
You have just heard the execution of Ivan Ray Stanley, which took place on July 12, 1984, in Jackson, Georgia. He's one of the 23 executions recorded by prison authorities in that state. We'll be back with more on the execution tapes and a discussion of the issues raised by them in a moment. This is a public radio special report, The Execution Tapes. I'm Ray Suarez in the studios of WNYC Radio in New York. Mike Wallace is a CBS News correspondent and the co-editor of 60 Minutes. He's televised Dr. Jack Kevorkian's euthanasia on a terminally ill man and argued previously for the broadcast of executions. What do you think of what you just heard?
I thought it was a matter of fact. See no reason why it should not be broadcast. The death penalty is popular in America. Politicians run as part of the process of running on their approval of the death penalty. Why shouldn't the American public have an opportunity to hear and to see what they have voted for?
That sounds like the reaction from Mike Wallace, the newsman. What about Mike Wallace, the human being who was listening to the report of electrodes being strapped to the legs and head and so on, the jolts being administered?
I suppose that I am... I've never seen one. I have never seen one and never heard one. But I am I suppose that I am simply responding not just as a reporter, but as a human being. If you believe in the death penalty, why not see it? It is public policy in America to put people to death, still, in many states, as a result of which, let the American people who vote for the politicians who favor the death penalty, let them see it.
Michael Bowers was the Attorney General of the state of Georgia for 16 years. Most of the 23 executions carried out by the state since the reintroduction of the death penalty were under his authority. He joins us from his home in Georgia. And, Mr. Bowers, we heard your voice authorizing the continuing of the execution of Ivan Ray Stanley. What do you think of what you just heard?
I think I agree with Mr. Wallace in that if this is what the American people want, why shouldn't they be able to hear it? I do have some trouble with televising, given the disruption that I have seen in so many instances where television is present. But as far as the broadcast, it doesn't bother me at all. If that's what the American people want, then they should have the choice of hearing that sort of thing.
Well, after all, your state's attorneys around Georgia are prosecuting people in the name of the people of Georgia, correct? I mean,
oh, certainly, yes.
So this is an expression of their will being carried out, in effect.
There's no question about that. It is the will of the people of Georgia. Has been for a long time. I assume it still is. I'm out of politics, but I'm quite sure that it still is the will of the people.
Listening back to it now, these many years later, does it strike you any differently, or is it pretty much the way you remember it?
It's the way I remember it. What it reminds me of is how very solemn all this is. It's a very somber occasion. You can't divorce yourself from being a human being and the fact that a life is being taken, that which God Almighty created, you're terminating, and it's very, very solemn and serious business, and I'm reminded of that after some 17 years.
Well, much of it was serious and solemn, but it seemed like there were some lighthearted moments at the end.
At the end, yes, and I suspect what you heard there was the enormous relief from pressure that people felt getting it over with. It's just so much pressure on people to take the life of another person. I can't tell you how solemn and pressure-packed it is. I witnessed probably 10 or 15, I don't remember, participated in 22, given the final word to the commissioner that there were no legal impediments, and it's serious business.
Let me bring in Diane Clements. She's the co-founder and president of Justice for All, a victims' rights group based in Houston. Her own entry into the victims' rights advocacy cause came after her son was killed by a neighborhood friend. What do you think of what you just heard, Diane Clements?
I don't think it was a matter of fact. I think it was very solemn. And I also believe that nowhere in the broadcast or in the introduction was the insurance man identified. And his name is Clifford Floyd. That was the man that was the victim of the murder that caused this execution.
Would you have any problem with executions like the one you just heard? Broadcast regularly as they occur in states that have the death penalty?
I would have a big problem with that. I would disagree with it on the very grounds that I just talked about. We did not take into account that this man was being executed because he murdered Clifford Floyd. the victim's participation is non-existent. They did not ask to be murdered, quite obviously. And I believe that public broadcast of executions would minimize that victim's death and re-victimize those families and, in many instances, victimize the families of the condemned.
What about Mike Wallace's suggestion that this, in effect, belongs to the public because this is a carrying out of a sentence imposed in their name? In the case of Mr. Bowers, prosecution carried on by his officers around the state in the name of the people of his state?
I haven't seen the people clamoring to show rapists serving 20 years or robbers serving 6 months in a county jail. It's not a clamor to see a punishment. It's a clamor for the public to witness an execution. It's not a clamor to see the punishment imposed.
What do you think about that, Mike Wallace?
It's not a question of clamor. If you want to turn it on, fine. I have no desire to watch an execution, certainly not more than once. But it seems to me that if we vote for execution, then what is the objection to it?
Michael Bowers, is there something different about the ultimate penalty from the other ones that that Diane Clemens mentioned, serving 6 years in jail for a crime or 6 months?
Absolutely. It's vastly different. It is the taking of a life, and for that reason, if for no other, it is dramatically different. In Georgia, at the time of Mr. Stanley's execution and the ones in which I participated, though constitutionally the victim could not, or the victim's family, could not have a say-so in terms of the imposition of the penalty or the timing, they were certainly made a part of things as much as we could by consulting with them, telling them when. They were at the prison in many instances. But as Ms. Clemens said, the victim didn't choose to be murdered. And under our constitutional system, given that the crime is one against the state and the people collectively, you can't have a victim's family making a major say-so, determinative say-so, in what penalty is imposed. You just can't do that under our Constitution.
Mr. Attorney General, what's the rationale for execution?
Retribution.
That's
there, it's certainly not...
Revenge.
Absolutely.
I see.
And that is a legitimate purpose of any penal sanction that is imposed. It can be rehabilitative, it can be protective, and it can also be revenge. That is perfectly legitimate, and it is the people's collective revenge when there is simply no other penalty appropriate for certain limited kinds of heinous murders.
Does it deter, do you think?
No, I don't think it deters, and the main reason it can't deter is because the length of time that expires between the imposition of the penalty and the carrying out, it's 15 years. And as Ms. Clemens pointed out, albeit indirectly, we don't even remember the names of the victims by the time we carry the penalty out. The one thing I did to sort of steel myself for all of these executions is to go back and read the record and find out exactly what did this guy do to deserve having himself in this fix at this point in his life. And after reading the records, the crimes are so heinous, I really didn't have a lot of trouble in my part of carrying out the executions.
Mm-hmm. Diane Clemens, final comment?
I believe that the death penalty is everything that revenge is not. Revenge does not have any of the aspects of the death penalty. Death penalty requires guilt, innocence, trial, appellate review, an entire process. Revenge has none of those qualities. I believe the death penalty is an appropriate punishment for certain crimes. I believe the death penalty is justice for certain offenses.
We'll continue our conversation a little later. Now, reporter Brooke Gladstone joins us again with an overview of some 24 executions recorded in Georgia. The excerpts are taken from more than a dozen hours of death chamber recordings made over the past 18 years, and once again, we repeat our caution to those of you who might find recordings of an execution procedure difficult to listen to. You might want to turn down or turn off your radio for the next 8 to 9 minutes.
To those of us who have never witnessed it, and that includes practically all of us, capital punishment is an issue that excites passionate argument. It's a catalyst for demonstrations and debate over the direction our society is taking. It is big. But if the tapes show us anything, they show how schedules and rituals and the amiability of ordinary people can make big things rather small. They can reduce momentous acts to straps and sponges and synchronized watches.
Have you coordinated your timepieces down there?
The one I've got is about a minute slow. I'm showing about 27 to 7.
20 seconds, it'll be 27 minutes till.
Listening to the tapes, one finds that as the executions proceed through the years, corrections officials describe them less and less. Fewer details seem worthy of note, but they faithfully and enthusiastically observe the passage of time and the meeting of schedules.
CP1, CP2.
Yes.
Witnesses have arrived and being escorted into the witness room at this time.
It's about perfect timing, CP3.
Couldn't be better.
The herding of witnesses in and out of the observation room, the strapping down and hooking up of the prisoners, the counts of three, the pushing of buttons, and the subsequent removal of the bodies, all performed strictly according to procedure by the staff with the calm and collected demeanor of NASA officials at Mission Control. Another procedure, more variable than the synchronizing of watches, but just as faithfully observed, is the recording of the final statements of the condemned, as the prisoners are called.
Richard Tucker, do you wish to make a last statement prior to your scheduled execution?
Yes, I do.
The final statement may be delivered at length from the holding cell, and also, if the prisoner agrees to be brief, directly from the electric chair. Here are the last words of Richard Tucker, just prior to his execution on May 22, 1987, for kidnapping, rape, and murder.
It has taken me some time, but I have learned that I'm a part of everyone, and everyone is a part of me, and that no matter where I go or how I go, everyone goes with me.
Exactly 1 week later, William Boyd Tucker, sentenced to death for the kidnapping and stabbing death of a convenience store attendant, spoke his final words.
No matter how sterilized and sanitized you make this execution, it's still murder. And it makes you guilty of the same crime you wish to punish me for. It may not matter to you now, but I leave you with my forgiveness and my love. I say goodbye to my family and my friends with a heart overflowing with gratitude, thanksgiving, and love. Thank you for the years of support, comfort, and stability, all of which have made me the man I am today. God bless you all.
Van Roosevelt Solomon was executed on February 20, 1985, for the murder of a gas station attendant. He was asked, in accordance with procedure, if he would like to make a final statement.
Yes, I'd like to say I'd like to give my blessing to all the people that seek to save my life. I'd like to curse everyone that seek to take my life. Farewell.
Solomon, neither seeking forgiveness nor granting it, sent his defiance out to the whole world. But when Jerome Bowden said his last words, he directed them to the very men who would lead him to the chamber and strap him in.
I'm thankful that Mr. Marable and all his administration has done whatever they could do to make this thing much more easier for me to deal with, because it is a very hard thing to deal with, and I know it, and they know it.
Jerome Bowden's crimes included burglary, armed robbery, aggravated assault, and the murder of two women for whom he was doing yard work. He was executed on June 24th, 1986.
On my count of three, press your buttons. One, two, three.
Good intentions, plus a national passion for technology, gave us the electric chair. The point was to improve on the gallows. Over the centuries, hanging had made for some gruesome executions because it frequently happened that the condemned would not die in the drop, but suffocate by inches, eyes bulging, legs jerking, skin darkening to purple. It was believed that electricity would enable the state to exact retribution swiftly and painlessly every time. But sometimes the execution cannot be carried out exactly as planned. For example, on December 12, 1984, 39-year-old Alpha Otis O'Daniel Stevens was scheduled to die.
The execution now has begun. There was one small jerk from the condemned at the time the execution was initiated. He is sitting very still now, And we are also now into the second phase of the execution.
After 1 minute, electricity was still passing through Stephen's body. At this point in the electrocution, most prisoners are very still.
There is a slight movement from the condemned's head. He seems to be moving his head from side to side slightly.
At the 3 minute mark, Stephen's movements were more pronounced.
Commissioner, Mr. Long?
Yes.
He is still moving his head slightly, kind of a bobbing up and down movement. Commissioner?
Yes.
Mr. Long, we have completed 4 minutes of lapse time. We have 1 minute remaining. And from my vantage point, I do detect, or it seems to be, that he is breathing.
Alpha Otis O'Daniel Stephens was still alive. The state begins the process of execution a second time.
On my count of three, the pressure button. One, two, three.
Commissioner, Mr. Long, the execution is initiated again at this time. The condemned made one big jerk, and now he is relaxing in the chair. I do not detect any other movement from the condemned at this time.
But Stevens didn't die.
What is the status on condemned?
Sir, he appears to be breathing to me.
You're going to have them check those sponges and check their connections. There's something they don't have connected right, Willis.
They decided to complete the execution before they made the check. Seconds later, more than 13 minutes after the process began, Alpha Otis O'Daniel Stephens was dead. No urgency, no panic, and no real explanation for the botched execution.
What kind of mood is he in now, Marable?
He's been nervous all day. He's pacing back and forth, and we got him out a while ago and shaved his head and leg and everything. He's awfully nervous.
As recorded in the Georgia tapes, the men in charge of the condemned show concern, but no conflict or sadness. They're consumed by the routine and the procedures designed to ensure a smooth, uneventful execution.
Marable.
Yes.
Do you have a feeling for the defendant's, condemned's reaction when you bring him in?
He's a little scared. I think he's going to be able to make it, though.
Okay.
The argument over whether capital punishment upholds or violates what we as a nation hold most sacred, all that untidy philosophical wrangling, takes place outside these doors. Here, inside, process and ritual crowd out contemplation. Here there is only the act of execution, a reality that with every repetition may seem to the listener less and less real. This is Brooke Gladstone reporting.
You're listening to a public radio special report, The Execution Tapes. I'm Ray Suarez in the studios of WNYC Radio in New York. Martin Garbus joins me now. He's a lawyer specializing in free speech cases and an experienced defense attorney in capital cases. These recorded executions, who do they belong to, and is it legal for us to play them?
Well, first of all, I've seen four executions. I think the tapes here are horrifically wonderful. I also bought lawsuits in the 60s trying to get TV access to executions up at Sing Sing in New York. I think the public should see the executions. I think my reaction as a human being to the first tape was that it was appalling, that it showed you everything horrible about the death penalty. I think that if you start to publicize executions, you will find some racial patterns, the enormous proportion of people executed being black. You'll also find that many of the people have IQs of 55 and 60. And I think that after a while, one of the things Wendy Lesser said, she said this will become so ordinary that you'll become used to it. I don't think so. I think it does persuade you that capital punishment is wrong. I think the public is entitled to see these executions, the botched up ones. I think from the victim's viewpoint, the public should have a chance to see it. The victim should have a chance to see it. I'm very clear on this.
Your firm gave advice to the producers of this program about moving forward with their broadcast. What was the legal argument for their dissemination to the public?
Well, I think that whether tapes are obtained legally or illegally, these tapes were obtained legally, But even if the tapes are obtained illegally, you can still show them. In other words, the Pentagon Papers case, in which I was also involved, you had illegally obtained material, which was then published in the New York Times. But we were asked about the question of access, and by and large, prisons will not give you access in TV. They'll not give you access in a whole bunch of things.
The fact that that last execution was so botched is a perfect example of why we should be permitted to witness executions, broadcast executions. Timothy McVeigh is going to be put to death in much the same way that Dr. Kevorkian put to death Tom Yauch. It is going to be sanitized, quiet, painless, no mess. It's a little bit like permanent anesthesia. If we're after revenge, why not chop off the criminal's hands?
I don't believe we're after revenge. We're after punishment. And contrary to what Mr. Lawrence said, currently there is all of the issues that he just spoke about, competency of counsel, IQ, race of victim, race of defendant, all of these are currently explored, vastly explored, within the media and within the appellate records.
That's not so. You
the
don't
victims,
know, for example, the IQ.
The victims are not explored. If we had public executions, there would be no more regard given to the victim of the crime than there is currently.
You're
it
absolutely wrong
happen.
Because what they would do...
I'm not absolutely wrong. Are they going to give a three-hour account of the crime? Are they going to show how the family has survived or not survived? Are they going to show the funeral pictures? Are they going to show the pain and suffering and terror that the victim went through before they do the public execution?
They certainly can.
No, sir, they're not.
They can if they want to.
What
they can focus on the entire incident.
What they want to do is focus on the execution, period.
I'm going to bring in Robert J. Lifton at this point in the conversation. Robert J. Lifton is a professor of psychiatry and psychology at John Jay College of the City University of New York. His most recent book is Who Owns Death? A look at the issues and individuals involved in capital punishment. Is the public ready to see or hear what we just heard in the Brooke Gladstone report, Robert Lifton?
I think this recording was repellent and valuable. It was repellent because it really, of course, it has a certain solemnity, but it also is routine. It shows a routinized process, a normalized process. This is the way you kill a person in that particular place. I thought of a NASA launching also. I also thought it sounded at times like an ordinary description of a crowd gathering or of a sporting event.
What kind of effect would it have on the people of the country or on the people of a particular state if they could routinely gain access to images or recordings of their state killing people?
I think there's a difference in the kinds of images or recordings. It's not all one thing. That's all in a lump process just the same. Even though I understand the motives of those who would like to televise executions because they think that people would be so horrified that we would in some way take a stand against them, I don't think that would be the national reaction. I think that you'd have a lot more numbing, diminished capacity or inclination to feel on the part of the public, the unreality that's been spoken of, another TV event, a sitcom, or you'd have something worse. You'd have an outpouring of vengeful, sadistic feelings on the part of the public, and we all have some of those feelings. So I'm not in favor of televising these. This was different because it was a kind of almost a journalistic account from within. It's an ugly document, but it's useful, and it doesn't create a vast spectacle like 18th or 19th century killings, which did indeed bring out vengeful, violent, and sadistic feelings in the public who were there, gathered there to watch it.
I want to get a reaction from all our panel members and hear one last comment. With the broadcast that we've just heard, the Georgia recordings, excerpts of various executions, with the approaching execution of Timothy McVeigh, which is going to be broadcast by closed-circuit television, are we moving closer to the day when we may be broadcasting executions, and what effect might that have? Diane Clements?
I do not believe that we are. I certainly hope that we are not. Public execution or broadcast of executions will only serve to minimize, devalue, and dehumanize the victims of these crimes.
Martin Garbus?
I don't think you will get it from the courts. You may get it if the hackers can get into things like the McVeigh execution. I think the internet world will do it. It will show it, and it will show it on an involuntarily. In other words, nobody wants it to happen, but you will be watching it on your computers at the same time that the state is denying you. You're going to have people walking into these executions with little cameras that are then going to be shown all over the internet. It would not surprise me if the hackers who have said they're going to break into the McVeigh closed circuit succeed in doing so. I think that one of the issues we haven't discussed is the whole question of the privacy right, if you will, of the person who's being executed. And it seems to me that if the person executed did not want to have the execution shown, then I think he would have a right to stop it.
Mike Wallace, are we moving closer to seeing broadcast executions?
I hope so, but I would not venture a guess.
And Michael Bowers, can you see the day when we would more commonly be able to see executions?
No, I can't, for two reasons. Number one, I don't know of any legal right on the part of the media to broadcast that a court might find. And second, at least in the part of the country where most executions occur, if Georgia is anywhere near representative of that part of the country, I can't imagine our legislature voting some sort of right to publicize or to have public execution. So, no, I don't think it's going to occur anytime soon.
Mr. Attorney General, may I interject something here?
Sure.
I'm old enough to remember when we were not permitted to have cameras in courtrooms. I think the chances are that we're going to have cameras in the Supreme Court sooner than we're going to have the publicizing, the televising of executions.
I want to thank you all, Robert J. Lifton, Michael Bowers, Martin Garbus, Diane Clements, and Mike Wallace. Great to have you all. A public radio special report. The Execution Tapes was a co-production of WNYC Radio and Sound Portraits Productions. Produced by Gary Covino and John Keefe and edited by Gary Covino. The associate producer was David Miller. Production assistants from Stacey Abramson, Michael Elsesser, David Isay, Kathy Lohr, Judith Osofsky, and Jamie York. Scott Strickland was the studio engineer. You can find more information about the Georgia Execution Tapes and more of the actual recordings on the internet at www.soundportraits.org. I'm Ray Suarez. Thank you for listening.